of the MTC PAC to order at 1:35 on Wednesday, December 12th. Welcome, everyone. Madam Chair, I believe we have a quorum. So, good. With that, I'd like to go through the first item on the agenda of action, which is the approval of the minutes from November 14th. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Let the record reflect that Dolores and Randy have abstained, as well as Lori and Naomi. So, Dolores, Randy, Lori, and Naomi as abstentions. All right. Public comments on items not on the agenda. I don't have any comment cards up here, and neither do I see anything waving at me furiously. I'll do it in a second. So I'm going to pass on that item. But I would like to have a staff comments on an item not on the agenda. So, Anne?
Thanks, Dolly. I just wanted to catch you all up on what we expect to bring to you next month. There is a discussion, as you're, some of you are aware, of the commission on what to do with our priority development area PDA planning program. And there was a decision by the commission to redirect $20 million out of the $40 million program to the congestion management agencies. And there is a remaining $20 million regional program. And these are actions that took place over the last couple of months. At the last meeting, staff presented some very broad options and engendered a lot of discussion by the commission on what to do with the $20 million regional program. And we are scheduled for your next meeting to use most of your meeting to discuss the specifics of that. I wanted to assure you that we weren't skipping working with you on it, because I know that was a concern, and rightfully so, as this moved forward through the commission. Just for a little heads up, there are a couple of issues that we're going to be putting information together for you on and then for the commission, and that's why it's taking a little bit more time than we could get to you this month. One is the set of proposals that the Association of Area Governments had submitted on where they would like to see the funding go in terms of the regional planning program, and that had to do with supporting and technical assistance to local jurisdictions for PDA planning, even the jurisdictions that will be receiving funds from the congestion management agencies. And the other large piece had to do with how much of their $20 million should go to supplement funds for the transit-oriented affordable housing fund, which has been a very successful program. And what we wanted to do before all this took place was to come back to you with just a really good briefing on how that program is going. The commission's very interested in supporting it. And so we'd really love your feedback on basically the breakdown of that $20 million to these different purposes. So we will get material to you hopefully within the next week or so. We also note that with the holidays, we didn't want to rush a discussion of this, so we'll do it first of the year prior to taking anything back to the full commission. And the planning committee will be looking at this early next year. Okay, if there are any questions about that, I realize it's not on the agenda, but I wanted to explain why at this point.
Carlos?
Thank you. I know we're going to get more information next month. I wanted to understand one of the last statements you made, that the transit-oriented affordable housing development fund, has it been, was that $20 million taken from what was expected to be set aside for an additional amount of money? Or I didn't quite get the comment you made there.
Sure, that's fine. When the regional program was a $40 million program, the commission had identified $15 million to go into the Affordable Housing Fund. Now that it's reduced by half, the question for the commission will be, do they retain the $15 million, leaving $5 for everything else, or do they want to look at a proportional shift in that? And there are some other considerations, and we'll get into those details later, but that's the issue, really, with the remaining $20 million. What should be spent on that purpose. Okay.
Yes, Rich?
Actually, I have a question along the same lines as Carlos does. With this money that's available, is that simply for planning, or if a TOD has already been developed and has an acre set aside and has already been planned for affordable housing. Can money be accessed to this fund to trigger development?
That's actually where the handoff would go from the PDA planning into the Affordable Housing Fund. So that's a really good question. We'll try to clarify that.
Because it's a shame to have something sitting there idle.
Oh, definitely.
That
which is why the commission
on.
Dedicated to actual housing fund and loan revolving loan program for that purpose. Thanks, Dolly.
Great, thanks. We look forward to that item. And you say that'll be the predominant item on our agenda next month, you think? Okay, thank you. All right, subcommittee reports. Naomi, how about the Equity and Access Subcommittee?
Thank you. Thank you. The Equity and Access Committee met just prior to this meeting, and we had pretty much one primary agenda item, which was the FTA Section 5310, 5316, and 5317 call for projects. 5310 is elderly and disabled transportation and provides capital projects, primarily vehicles, sometimes software or radio type things, and often to nonprofits, but sometimes public agencies. So that is a call that is out right now for the whole region, actually for the whole state. And the 5316 and 5317 are, as I said, JARC and New Freedom, and there is a current call for small urbanized areas only. So that information is out there and available on the website for anybody you may know who may be interested in researching more about those. And we also, under items not on the agenda, we had a brief update from Jennifer Yeamans on the coordinated plan process, and that will be coming back to the subcommittee in January for us to review, because the draft plan will have been released by then. So we as a subcommittee will get a chance to review it, and then I believe this entire council will get a chance to review it in February, and we will let you know at that time our conclusions as well from January. Any questions?
Okay, thank you, Naomi. Our first item presented by staff this afternoon is by Denise Rodriguez, and this is item 5, our disadvantaged business and enterprise small business in Title 6 report, all wrapped into one. So thank you, Denise.
Good afternoon. Once again, I'm Denise Rodriguez, and yeah, those are some long acronyms when you read them out the long way.
Denise, do you mind if I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
You know, I don't know about anybody else, but I think with the air on, maybe my head is stuffed up, but I'm finding it a little hard to hear. Can we turn the volume up just a little on people's microphones? Or that would be great. Okay, because I know I have a stuffed head, but thank you.
Is this better?
A little bit better, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought I was being too loud. Okay. Okay, the first item I'd like to update you on is the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise and Small Business Enterprise Outreach that MTC has undertaken in the last few months. Attached to the memo that was submitted last week are some flyers and some newsletters. My understanding, I just found out this morning, that some of the hard copies may have printed incorrectly, so I brought some clean copies, left them on the table there. If anyone wants them, of course, if I didn't make enough copies, just let Pam know and we'll get you clean copies. So MTC works in cooperation with 13 other transit agencies in the region, including Caltrans, SFMTA, VTA, BART, to do outreach on a regional level. And through that, we're able to issue a quarterly newsletter and have quarterly outreach events and different outreach events every time. As you will see from the attachment there, there was a bonding and small business loan program that was hosted here at MTC. There was a CalMentor, A&E, and other professional services business development workshop, and there was also a Meet the Buyer forum. So we really try to mix it up and do something different every time, and we think it's beneficial to the public, when they come, rather than hear just about MTC's contract opportunities, but rather to hear about all of the regional transportation contract opportunities. And then, like with the event that we had recently in October, after the event, there was also a mixer for primes and subs to meet and network. So by pooling our resources, we're really able to engage and do a lot more. Now that the year is wrapping up, the calendar year, we plan on a calendar year, we'll be planning the next four outreach events for 2013 and also issuing newsletters and things like that. This information is always posted on our website, and we also post information about other outreach events that maybe MTC isn't participating in, but we post this on our website to spread the word. But these are just events that I wanted to note that MTC was actually directly involved with. I'll move on to Title VI now. One of the major things that happened over the last few months was in August, the FTA issued two new circulars, one on environmental justice and one on Title VI. The environmental justice circular really took what was previously part of the Title VI circular and moved it into its own circular. The FTA says that there are no new requirements, but it really does expand and explains a lot because it went from one page included in a Title VI circular to, I believe, over 60 pages in a separate circular. So, but it really does explain and it tries to clarify for recipients how to meet those requirements. So if anyone wants the links to the, I mean, they're posted pretty on the FTA website, but if anybody needs some help getting direction to those circulars, I can certainly provide that. One of the things that has been required of MTC and continues to be required of MTC is monitoring of subrecipients. And because of the new Title VI circular, what we've done is updated the program management plan. And staff in the report to this council last month mentioned that. They're really directed straight from the Title VI report to update the program management plan, which applies to the JARCA New Freedom subrecipients. That program management plan went to the Programming Allocations Committee this morning. That was okayed and will be going to full commission at the end of this month for adoption. After that is adopted fully, we will have another workshop. We've had a previous workshop with the JARCA New Freedom recipients. And we'll have another workshop to let them know exactly the requirements of the program management plan, about the new Title VI circular, and really help these subrecipients understand what's required of them and help them through it. I mean, we're talking about are small nonprofits, and we really want to help them through the process. We don't want to be onerous and just say, bureaucratic, just meet these requirements, figure them out. So I just wanted to point that out. Another area where we're required to monitor is with the congestion management agencies. As part of OBAG, MTC... delegated project selection for OBAG projects to the CMAs. So what we did was we adopted Resolution 4035, which has very very clear guidance on the public participation and local engagement process that we want the CMAs to follow. That's been adopted. We had a workshop on November 5th to go over those requirements with the CMAs and talk to them about what they're doing, because they're already doing most of this. And I think that the workshop was really successful. We shared ideas about what MTC currently does, and then we had representatives from all nine CMAs at the workshop, and everyone already has this, has started their engagements, and they'll be continuous and ongoing. And everything we heard was right on point, so we were really happy with that. The last time I was here, I mentioned that we had received our Title VI review from FTA back in, was it April? Yes, my memory does serve me correctly. And we have worked to close everything but one item, and the only reason that item isn't closed, and that's the language assistance plan work, is just because it takes time and effort. So we have started that engagement. We issued an RFQ for a consultant to help us revise the analysis related to limited English proficient people MTC's interaction and involvement with that community to see if that would then change the language assistance plan that we have adopted. So we've started that engagement with MIG Incorporated. They are a consultant helping us. And we will be issuing staff and LEP surveys to the public. We'll be working with CBOs within the region to issue those surveys to the LEP population. We'll also have two focus groups. The first one is scheduled for this Sunday, which is the 16th, and that'll be in San Jose, and that'll be at one of the CBOs there. And the next one will be on the 18th in South San Francisco. And so we'll continue that analysis, and depending on the results of that analysis, we'll either revise our language assistance plan and then issue it for public comment and then adopt the new plan, or depending if the changes aren't as extensive as we expect them to be, then we would just probably be an addenda change the language assistance plan. But of course, we'll keep your council up to date on those things. Another area that our FTA review found that we needed to take corrective action in, which we have finalized, is the CLIPR program. But one of the things that the FTA asked us to continue to do was to continually report to them on a quarterly basis on the ongoing efforts related to CLIPR, because it's an ongoing project. We submitted our first quarterly report back in September. We issued the second quarterly report this morning. We have closed out many of the items, or many of the changes we wanted to make with the CLIPR program we have already taken care of, I guess you could say. One thing would be changing from a $5 card fee, so it's a $3 card fee across the board, no minimum load. But other areas where they're continuous and ongoing would be like monitoring the retail network. So that's something where we'll continue to report, and as long as the program is in place, we'll have to continue looking at those types of things. And just the last item there would be that the Title VI Working Group continues to be in place, and MTC takes the lead on that. We found that it's been really helpful just having the interaction with other agencies, not only within our region, but throughout the country, really. And one area that it's been helpful just to know what other staff is working on this and what other people are doing is, say, CBO outreach. You know, for the engagement on Sunday, VTA was integral in helping us find that CBO. Additionally, staff here, PI staff, is working to come up with a set of standard translated transportation verbiage so that it's standard throughout the region. And Leslie Lara has been able to then get with the regional her regional context and start developing that. So we think it's been successful, and so, of course, we'll continue that. And with that, I'll close and ask if anyone has any questions of me.
Great. Thanks, Denise. Any questions for Denise? Okay, Naomi.
Okay, thank you. Hearing you mention the CLIPR reminded me of something, and I don't know that this necessarily plays into your work, but I did just want to get it out there. Something that I've been hearing from our providers and our consumers in Alameda County is concern about access to actually getting a card the first time. That the transit agencies have very different hours from each other. Sometimes the hours are very limited. I'm also concerned that the hours to get an RTC CLIPR card may be more limited than the hours to get a youth or a senior card. I've also heard from somebody that they actually had to take their children out of school in order to go and get a youth CLIPR card because the hours were just not available enough to them. So that was something that I wanted to put out there that I've been hearing. Thank you.
I will follow up with CLIPR staff on that question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Kathleen.
I would just second some of Naomi's comments because there have been some access and awareness issues in San Mateo County as well, in specifically like the SamTrans customer service office and their hours. Another concern that's been raised under number two, in terms of school identification cards, I know that the cutoff is really based on age, but in some of our counties with really cities with poor educational outcomes, we're actually seeing people age 19 who are still in high school. Mm-hmm. And that's their school bus. Mm-hmm. So I would even ask to push that farther and consider that. I don't have a solution for that. It speaks to the larger educational issue, but please consider that. And then also in terms of the availability, I know the partnership with Walgreens is well established. There are very few Walgreens in my county. We have lots of CVS. Mm-hmm. So I would just continue to push for additional retail outlet availability and retail partnerships on those. And literally advertising, banners on buildings, Clipper available here. I've seen that in some places. But people just, even if they know about the card now, they're like, where do I get one?
Yeah.
So I know there's a lot of good work being done to offer things and put them out there, but the informational piece is a linchpin in it.
Okay.
And then lastly, I was wondering, within the language assistance plan, to back up a bit, if some of those initial findings could be brought back to the Equity and Access Subcommittee as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Rich, and then Carlos.
Yeah, I would like to share two of my experiences on Clipper, if it's permissible. I actually applied at two agencies, one at LA TAP and one at Clipper. Both were pretty satisfactory. I actually walked across the street and there are other locations and asked for a card. I filled out an application. They gave me the card that day, senior card as well. With LA, I actually had to get a 2-inch square picture, and it has to be exact, and that's not easy on a regular computer. So that would be one thing I would comment on. And I have a cutting machine for pictures too, so that helped. But I sent it to LA. It was supposed to be in 5 weeks. Ended up being about 8. But when I called after about 6 weeks, they were very nice and updated me and told me that it's a little bit longer. Now, here's the one hitch, and it's the only one that I found. And that is, in both of them are run by the same people, when I signed up, they automatically put me into the website. So when I try to get on to fund it, I don't have a password. And so I then had to call again and find out why I couldn't get on. I did it with Clipper. They were very polite, explained it to me, gave me a temporary password, and then I funded it. So then I already knew what to tell the tap card people when I called them. So, I'm a historic complainer, and this was a pretty easy situation for me.
So just so I'm clear, when they signed you up automatically, you didn't get an email saying, here's your temporary password. It just thought you would know it via osmosis or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And actually, they know that's happening. She said we're getting calls all the time.
But I'll pass that on.
If they did something like that, some people will miss the email, but most won't.
Yeah.
And not everybody has email, but it would solve a lot of their problems if they did that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. So first, I had two comments. First, to our questions. First, comment on the Clipper, since we're all talking about it. And I think I'm maybe just echoing both what Naomi and Kathleen said, is I think that we need to, through the chair, I would offer that if the staff could possibly bring this, since there's a quarterly report that's happening, could it be brought maybe to the Equity and Access Subcommittee on a quarterly report level? I don't know if that's something that we would consider, but it seems important enough as we're hearing it. I don't know if it needs to be the entire, maybe we could discuss that, but the entire council or just the Equity and Access Subcommittee. The second is actually a question unrelated to Clipper. Actually, going back to the One Bay Area grant, and this again kind of goes back to the maybe this is anecdotal, and so I'm trying to get clarification as to the decisions that were made a month ago or so. I went to an Alameda County Transportation Commission meeting, and it sounded to the commissioners there were saying that now ACTC and the other CMAs have a can kind of also come up with different communities of concern other than the ones that MTC has set. And I wanted to understand that a little bit better, how they would have come up with that statement that was said, and because I thought that MTC had kind of come up with a standard for how to identify communities of concern.
Maybe I can answer that one. It's really to grandfather in those communities of concern that the CMAs may have already conducted their community-based planning around. As you know, we updated the definition of a community of concern with a lot of input from this group, and so that's the definition used in OBAG. But this was an opportunity to make sure that we aren't forgetting that there were projects and communities that were already on the books. and may need to be implemented. Okay.
Kathleen?
Just to clarify on that, but it doesn't permit expansion beyond the initial CBTP communities and the newly refined COCs.
That's right.
Okay, great. Denise, going back to the Clipper cards and distribution, one of the things I think we had spoken about, this committee had spoken about a year ago, was to see if we couldn't get distribution sites at senior centers, because that's where many of our seniors went, attended, and also at school district offices. So not having a program at every school district school site necessarily, but that may help parents be able to get youth passes. Now, I'm not sure that's logistically feasible from your staff's point of view or Clipper staff point of view, but that may be something that addresses a lot of the concerns that people are talking about in terms of maybe not having a Walgreens, but of course every community has at least one senior center now. So.
I know that they are working on mail-in applications for youth and seniors, and that that's still in process, but I'll definitely pass these on as well, because any ideas are welcome to try to spread the word.
Thank you. Randy?
It's not necessarily, and I do appreciate the mail-in option, because taking kids to, say, VTA to get a card is just not feasible, but it's the reloading issue that we run into, because communities that are underbanked or non-banked residences don't have access to a credit card or an ATM card that allows them to go online to reload. So for us, there's a significant lack of ability to reload. And the way VTA's got it set up at their stops, you can't reload a Clipper card at a VTA stop. No, the tag on is completely separate from where you pay for anything, and before we launch anything else, I really want to see the system integrated better, because I can't, for instance, convert anything at a stop to, say, a day pass rate. It's just a straight one way fare no matter how I get on. So I think that's a really important component for us to look at.
Seeing no other questions or comments, Denise, again, thank you for the update. I think this is, even though we're plugging along here, has been a rich discussion, and hopefully the Access and Equity Committee will be able to hear the quarterly updates as you provide them.
Yeah, I will work with Pam on the two things, would be the Clipper quarterly reports as well as the analysis related to the language assistance plan to bring those results.
Great. And then we're going to end this discussion item after Kathleen says one last thing.
I'm sorry. I had a question in regards to CMA. I know that in my kind of, they define stakeholders as potential project applicants, whereas that's not what I consider to be a complete representative group of stakeholders. So what was the direction given to CMAs in regards to stakeholders?
The direction we gave them was very much more expanded beyond stakeholders as project applicants. This was reaching out into communities, making sure that language assistance is provided, a whole host of different activities, especially to comply with Title VI. This information and an agreement just went out to them, and they are to come back to the commission and explain how they accomplished that when we review their work late in the fall of next year. So there is going to be a feedback loop for the commission to see how well that went, and I would encourage all of the advisors here who participate in that process to provide some feedback. I know it was of concern to some that by having project selection at the CMA level, we might lose some of that, but currently they are committed to conduct a much more thorough outreach program.
Okay, great. Let us go on then to item 6. Thanks again, Denise. Go on to item 6, and this is going to be presented by both Pam and Catalina, the Plan Bay Area public participation. Next steps.
Okay, there it goes. So I'm Catalina Alvarado with MTC's Legislation and Public Affairs section, and I'm going to start out the presentation, and Pam will chime in as
appropriate. If anything I might leave out. As the memo notes, we are on the home stretch for development of our Plan B area, which is the region's sustainable community strategy and also the region's regional transportation plan. The draft plan will be released in March of 2013, and we're organizing a number of options for the public to comment on the draft plan. I want to stress that we're proposing a variety of options to capture comments from a wide range of individuals, and I'm here today to review with you some of those options that we're going to be proposing and putting together. And we'll be reviewing these options with on Friday with MTC's Planning Committee and ABAG's Administrative Committee. On Friday, there's a joint meeting of the two groups. So to start the list that's in your memo, your packet, rather, we'll be holding a series of meetings in all nine counties. We're proposing an open house format that would run approximately 2 hours in length, followed immediately by a two-hour public hearing. And the open house would be a series of display stations that would give members of the public an opportunity to ask questions and review the draft plan prior to the public hearing portion of the meeting. We don't know the full extent of the number of display stations, but we're assuming they would follow the chapters of the draft plan, again, to give the public an opportunity to understand the plan and be able to comment on it. And the plan would also be available, you know, of course, in advance of the meetings. We'd also have a common station available during that public house, rather during that open house portion, just in case individuals couldn't wait around and stay for the public hearing portion. Any comments that we receive during the open house portion at this common station would be taken under full consideration, just as if they had been received during the public hearing portion of the meeting. And the public hearing portion, this would be a formal public hearing where those wishing to speak would be asked to fill out a card, and then they'd have an appropriate number of minutes. I guess the length would depend on the number of individuals in attendance at each meeting. Again, these are scheduled for one in every county in the region. We'll be reviewing a few of the logistics with our commissioners and ABAG executive board members. We have heard that some of our commissioners would like to preside at some of those public hearings, so all that is still being ironed out. So beyond these open house and public hearings, we'll also be conducting a telephone survey, as we've done in the past, and this is to capture a more statistically valid set of results. We'll also be working with our community-based organizations that we've done so previously. As you know, we have about 14 community-based organizations that we've been working with throughout the process of developing the plan. PAM is the lead on this outreach. They will be holding focus groups in it's eight counties. Of the community groups that we're working with are in eight of the nine counties, and we're encouraging them to bring together community leaders in order to present to them the draft plan. The community-based focus groups will be held prior to the release of the draft plan, so we'll be giving them some background information, what to expect on the plan, getting them set so that they can understand the plan once it's released, and we'll be giving them incentives to send individuals to attend the workshops as well. The legislation, SB 375, also calls for briefings with locally elected officials. So that's another series of nine meetings that we'll be organizing for locally elected officials in throughout the region. In anticipation of the release of the draft plan, we've also updated the One Bay Area website. We've tried to organize it in such a way that it's a little easier to find the voluminous number of materials and documents that have been released since we started developing the plan, and
We also, as part of that website, will be introducing a new online forum. We're going to be calling it Bay Area Town Hall. This will be an opportunity for individuals to comment online, and you'll be able to see what others are commenting on as well. And finally, the as part of the EIR, we'll be holding some public hearings for that. So finally, I want to encourage you to let us know of any groups you may be a member of that would be willing to pass along information about these numerous opportunities to comment. We'll be working with other groups to pass along emails and flyers and whatnot in order to encourage individuals to comment on the plan. So if you're a member of a group and you want to give us your contact information now, we can make sure to reach out to you when we're ready with these items. Or if you just know of a group you want us to contact, we can make the initial contact if you give us, you know, some information on those groups. That concludes the presentation. If I can answer any questions.
Thanks, Catalina. I'm going to start here with Aegon, and then I'll move right down the list.
Great. Thank you. It's a great overview. I have one clarification question, maybe for Steve or Anne, and then kind of for all of you. The first clarification, just on the sort of difference between the EIR public hearing and the broader one, if you could just say a little bit more about that. I know, as you know, the EIR has obviously been delayed for its release, but you talk about the EIR being separate kind of per state law, but the time frame has been a little bit constrained. So just sort of how those two are coming together. And then I have a second question.
Okay. Both the EIR and the plan will be issued at the same time. So the two will, well, the plan will reference the EIR more than the other way around. The EIR is a technical document. The public hearings for the EIR are intended to be more for the technical input of all the resource agencies and the like. But the town halls and the information that, or the, what do we call it, open houses and the like, will also provide some information about what the EIR has produced. So there is a need to make sure they have, there's a, you know, bridge between the two, but they are two separate requirements in terms of fulfilling the requirements of the EIR and the plan.
Maybe just a follow-up on that, because I'm just, my understanding is that the EIR obviously has a series of, there's different sort of options you're looking at, and you evaluate them, and the question becomes which is the best one, but clearly the plan's going to be released, it's already predetermined what's the best mix of policies and programs and packages from the EIR information. And so I'm concerned that the public will be asked on the one hand in an EIR workshop to respond to that, to provide comment, and then on the other hand, there's a plan already out there that's picked the best one, and the public doesn't have a chance for the feedback. I realize the time constraint you're under, but so I guess the question is, how do you plan to respond to that? And let me just put in for the purposes sort of the general question I wanted to put out there, which is, what did you learn, I mean, to Pam as well, what did you learn from the outreach in the fall that you want to do differently? And to try to do that in a positive sense, right, not in the kind of defensive sense of how do you make sure there's judges presiding it over so the hearings aren't shut down, but what was some of the best feedback you got? How do we make sure that the public is excited about what's in it, not just the flip side to how do we make sure that some people don't shut down the hearings? But that's, I'm curious about that generally, but also I don't know if Steve or Ann want to weigh in on a little bit the potential concern for the public to be confused about what they're being asked to provide feedback on.
You know, my experience is that, especially informed members of the public, and we've got a lot of them in the Bay Area, tend to tell us what they want to tell us no matter what we ask them. So I'm sure you, among others, will be talking plenty about the EIR at the plan hearings and maybe not so much vice versa. This environmental review is different, I think, it's fair to say, from most of the ones we've done in the past, in part because we have sponsors of three of the alternatives. I mean, as you say, we have selected a preferred alternative. That's what we're obligated to do under the law, so we're not stealing the march on anybody. We've said we like this one the best. But the business community and a coalition of social justice organizations have developed their own. And I don't expect them to be bashful about advocating what they think are the best attributes of of their alternative and the results as they're depicted. So I think once we get through this process, we will have still more public comment and review when the matter gets back before our committees and our boards. And I think that's where we will probably have to piece together if we do decide to vary from the preferred alternative or to try to put some sort of hybrid together. That's where I think we'll have to try to put Humpty Dumpty together. I think one objective of this round of public outreach is just to get through it. And I do think there are a number of groups and individuals who simply are intent on disrupting it. And so one thing we learned is to try to give them a format that is least disruptible. And I think a lot of folks have an interest in just standing up and saying their piece, like at the old New England town hall meeting, and that's what we're going to have. And the notion of trying to encourage people to have dialogue and in smaller groups, and I think that's what a lot of folks rebelled against. So we're not going to do that. And I think it's also important to emphasize, as the memo does, that the public hearings are one way we're going to get input. And in my history here, stretching almost 20 years now, there are certain kinds of people who come to public hearings, and they are not necessarily representative of the Bay Area at large. They seldom are. And so we are going to do some polling and some other ways of trying to get a more rounded view. You're one of them, a more rounded view of what a representative sampling of the Bay Area thinks about what we're up to. So I think that's, in a nutshell, perhaps what we've learned, and some of those lessons maybe sound defensive, but I think based on what we went through, we've earned the right to be. And I think the EIR and the plan have always been somewhat in tension, and maybe more so this time, but I think there will be an opportunity at the end of the process to try to knit them together. And obviously they both have to be adopted together.
So just a really quick follow-up then. You're saying that the Plan Bay Area that comes out at the same time as the EIR is the environmental is based on the environmental analysis of the preferred scenario. It's not a new picking and choosing among the alternatives that you're done. And if that were to happen, that would happen later.
Well, let me try to say it differently. In the past, when we put a draft out, the odds were pretty high that the final would look a lot like the draft. I think the odds are lower this time, frankly, because we are evaluating quite a number of additional EIR alternatives than we usually do, and because also this is the first time we've done one on this kind of a plan. And it obviously has gotten a lot of attention. A lot of people like it, a lot of people don't. And the people who don't like it for different reasons. So I just think it's going to be more fluid this time. We may end up with something that looks very similar to the preferred alternative. And one thing I'll caution you about, just so that you don't get too frustrated at the outset, all the alternatives are going to share a lot in common. Because they're all talking about an increment of growth and an increment of investment over the system we have today. And the system we have today is very extensive and very well established. We're one of the most, you know, we're one of the oldest European settlements in the western United States. So, I mean, a lot of stuff is here already, and that stuff's not going to get dug up and thrown out in the next 30 years. So I think we're going to have to dig pretty deeply to discern the real differences between the alternatives. Because even though the business community and the social justice community may advocate their alternative with great earnestness and point out the fact that theirs isn't like theirs at all, they're actually going to be quite similar to each other. And I would guess they're going to be quite similar to our preferred alternative as well. So I think we're going to be talking about fairly fine differences between and among them.
I would just maybe say that one suggestion for the outreach piece is that to have the opportunity in the telephone survey and the CBO groups for those groups to weigh in on some of those distinctions. I mean, we haven't seen them, so the public, I don't think, knows the distinctions. I think you could argue that the policy differences might be a lot, whereas the investment might not be very different among them. But just that the public, when they're weighing in these other channels, should be able to talk about the EIR alternatives to help inform what ultimately gets adopted. But thank you, Steve.
I have Rich and then Lori.
I think one of the things we do to make the meetings interesting and exciting is to make sure that they're run correctly and that they run as smoothly as possible. People that really come to exchange ideas get really disgusted when meetings are driven by anger and polarized points of view. I have a lot of experience at the cradle of democracy with trying to run union meetings with groups intent on running the meetings till all hours of the night, time after time, and discouraging the rank and file from coming to meetings so that they can control the meetings. And you have to come up with novel ways to try to get people there that actually want to exchange ideas and to try to limit the ability of groups that come with a predetermined point of view to try to shut out all other views, to at least allow those views to be discussed as well.
Thanks, Rich. Lori, and then Naomi.
Okay. I just want to say that I think that these approaches to public engagement are very, very good, and I think they will all be effective. And I don't think there's any real way of being able to control a crowd as long as you ensure that the message is communicated effectively. That's just how community residents are in any given engagement process. But I want to add that under the community-based focus groups that, you know, meetings that you're going to have, I think this is the most effective of all of the plans, because what better way to do outreach than using the community-based organizations to kind of do it within their own community. So I think this is going to be very effective. And I want to say that, or ask that, once the survey is done, will we get a copy of how the survey went in each of these areas in terms of the progress that was made and what the efforts that were made and the end results?
Yes, you will. We do a final report that documents what we heard as in the process, so we can definitely bring that back to this committee.
Great. Thanks, Lori. Okay, Sandy and then Naomi. Naomi, and then we'll come back.
I just had, thank you, I just had a couple of suggestions related to access from what I saw on our county meetings, not for this process, but when we were doing our TEP development and also the events I've run. It's common to do, to have a statement in your invitation that available, our alternative materials are available on request with a certain amount of notice. But since you're going to have several meetings and a lot of the materials are going to be the same, I'd suggest maybe getting something ready so that you have it in case somebody requests it, and then hopefully it won't be cost prohibitive, and then you can take it from one meeting to the next and you'll be ready, because sometimes people get very angry when they can't get their alternative materials and they're like, why should I have to ask ahead of time? So anything you can do about that would be helpful. We found that it's helpful to really usher people into the area and into the seating sometimes, and, you know, move chairs or just help people get settled and get their food. And it's just really helpful to have your staff have that very much firmly in mind. Thank you.
Sammy.
I'm still not sure I remember the question I initially intended to ask, but some other small questions have arisen. One was when you answered a question related to the EIR hearings, I thought I heard you say that it's more for agency staff of local agencies to participate in those. I wanted to get clarification on that. I wasn't sure what I heard.
I think that's what Ann said over here, and I think what she was indicating is that our experience, at least, is that the EIR hearings tend to draw sort of the inside baseball crowd, and the plan hearings tend to draw more regular citizens, laymen. That may be different this time, but that's just sort of what we expect, and so we tend to organize them accordingly. We do have a lot of interest from, you know, public agencies and resource agencies, and the kind of comments they give to us can be quite technical at times and not all that interesting to folks who are really talking at a different foot level than they are.
Is there going to be any attempt to bridge that or to make that obvious from the get-go? I mean, I think it's important to be able to get that 1,000-foot level feedback as well as that technical feedback, and it may not be the same meeting.
I agree, and I think the best way we can do it, and Agon was sort of heading in the same direction, is to feather in a lot of the EIR information to the extent we can into the plan hearings, because I think those are going to be the big events. That we will not lack for excitement, I'll tell you that, whoever was worried about that. But I think trying to bring those two things together, even though they're two separate legal documents with two separate procedures, is going to enhance the public discussion.
Okay. So the other two things, I just kind of thinking back to my own experience with the past workshops, one, I do think it's important to share at the meeting that at that meeting is only one source of the information that's going to be gathered, and saying that from the get-go so that everyone there knows that. Also, I was thinking of the at least the media response that I saw to the disruptions of the hearings, and I think getting on the front end with the media about these workshops I also think is really important so that in the event that they are disrupted, that it's taken in context. And then lastly, one of the observations I made at the last hearings was that there seemed to be a traveling posse from county to county, and if there could be attempts made to ensure that the people that come to the hearings in any county live in that county, that might also help temper the level of
I may have to disagree with you about that one, because I think someone asked earlier what mistakes have we learned from. I think one big mistake we made the first time through was this notion of some kind of registration system, and we were doing it to try to manage demand and, you know, be good government types, and we just got clobbered with it because a lot of these groups just sort of took it over and abused it. And then we got accused of shutting out public testimony. And so I think individual commissioners have a way of pointing that out, and I think that's probably the best way to handle it. My experience from this round, and it's atypical from any other experience we've had, frankly, but the experience with what we did have is the more we try to manage a lot of the folks who are upset and angry, the harder it is and the more vocal and difficult they become. So what we're doing here is very old-fashioned in terms of an outreach technique. You know, here's your 3 minutes, here's the microphone, go to it. But I think that's what a lot of these folks want to do, is just get some things off their chest. And so if they do, I think we're gonna give them the chance to do it. And not try to manage them or mediate them or facilitate them into some other type of discussion. I wish we could do it differently. I don't think it's necessarily the most meaningful way to gather public opinion, but I think it's where we are on this plan.
I have Randy, and then Linda, and then Rich.
Thank you. I'm going to, let's see, there's a couple of things. And the first one is the idea that the plan is more of a generic community input over policy versus the EIR meetings being the more technical avenue. And I have to warn you that I come from a community that's very inside baseball. We attend every EIR meeting that there is. So I I don't want to downplay either of them, and I don't want to give my community of any of them the idea that there's this separation in that manner. So my suggestion is that we matrix out in a visual way the upcoming meetings, the EIR schedule, and that we show people where this information plugs in. That this meeting is the EIR meeting, and there's going to be a lot of technical stuff there. Public input is certainly welcome because you have to, and because the purpose of an environmental impact report isn't just the technical data. It's the boots on the ground who are going to be affected by what happens at the end of the EIR process. So it's very important for me to have that very clear on a piece of paper or someplace, and it helps people at the stations. Oh, this is a technical issue that you need to actually send over to the EIR. Here's the meeting that you can go to. And it helps kind of funnel all of that. And I only because I've done this with crazy communities am I worried that this could backfire on us. So that's my suggestion for that. As far as the meetings themselves, I have to say that the idea of commissioners conducting the public portion of the meetings makes me a little itchy. I think that we have professional staff that are attending these meetings that should be responsible for conducting the meetings in the same manner each time. And that kind of takes the personality of your local commissioners out of it. I mean, it takes the confrontational portion of it because what I observed was people who had personal issues with my commissioner getting in his face. And this reflexive, defensive thing that you go through. So I think in order for us to say we've done this the same way across the board, that we need to maintain a consistency there. I just feel really strongly about that. And I hate putting the whole burden on the staff. But I think it's appropriate for the commissioners to be there and to be identified as the commissioners and to do welcoming and to be circulating during the before and after. But I think it's inappropriate for them to be conducting the public, just the time when people have a microphone portion of it, because there's too much tendency when you're a public official to respond. There just is. We can't help ourselves. My other suggestion is, when you set the time limit for the people at the microphone, have a kill switch. I'm afraid in my county I'm going to insist on a kill switch because it takes it out of the you're personally trying to cut me off thing. It's like, hey, we've got a kill switch. When the time's up, the microphone goes off. It's not my fault. It's, you know, this is the way it goes. And make sure that happens so that we have a consistent, again, back to the consistency of what people can expect. There was one more thing. I would also recommend that it's like down in my area, you have the capacity to contact the public access TV stations so they can either live stream it. If you hold it at my city hall, it can be live streamed. So that takes, hopefully, some of the public out of the on-site scenario, but still maintains the ability to participate or the ability to just watch, because some people want to know what's going on. They don't necessarily want to be sitting in the masses, and they'd rather be sitting in their pajamas at home having a nice hot toddy. The last issue that I have is access. I felt that there was, at our meeting, some questionable, not questionable, and it wasn't the staff's fault, but just because of the dynamics of the meetings and the attitude, I would not have felt safe were I in a defensive position of not being able to get up and walk out. It was not a safe environment at times. And so I don't want to discourage people who may have attended. I have former elected people who attended the meeting who will never attend again because they felt it was not a safe environment. So I want to make sure that everybody has an equal chance to participate no matter what. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Linda?
Actually, I was going to comment on something Randy talked about, and that is those people that really did want to give comments that were so discouraged at the last one said, I'm never coming back to one of these. You know, how are we going to get those people to come back? That's the question.
I was just going to say we're going to try and encourage them, if they don't want to come back to the meeting, to come back online. And
Rich, and then Kathleen.
My point on the long history I have with meetings is you run the people off that really want to participate with all of that stuff. I think that the kill switch is a good idea. I was thinking about that, was wondering whether, I'm glad you brought it up. I thought it might get thumbs down from all the super Democratic people in this room, but a kill switch is really a good idea. It stops the people just shouting over you when you ask them, tell them the 3 minutes are up. And I think also that afterwards I'll mention a couple of groups to you. So if you're going to stay after the meeting, that's it.
Thank you. I just had a couple of considerations around some of the additional outreach. I really applaud this approach. I think it's going to produce a great result. In regards to the telephone survey, will we be doing oversampling of LEP populations?
I can't say yet. We haven't begun meeting with the pollsters, but you're suggesting overpolling LEP?
Yes, I am.
We have in the past translated the polls into Spanish and Chinese and had it available. So if in the course of the...
Great. And I think in Santa Clara County in particular, there's a demand for Vietnamese as well.
Okay.
In terms of the community-based focus groups, last time, I really admire the community groups that were engaged in the effort, like Housing Leadership Council, et cetera, but I know that the lead time they had to put together their workshops or that they had, you know, after engaging in the contract and then moving forward, was very tight and very limited turnout with some of their community of concern workshops. So I would just advise, you know, much stronger guidance to the CBOs on that outreach and sort of how they should be pacing it and really digging in and helping them perhaps, and we can too in our counties, to broaden their outreach. And would really kind of pick up on some of what Aegon said in terms of helping them highlight and parse out those marginal differences between the alternatives. Because if you're not already in these conversations, a lot of times those differences aren't clear. And like Steve said, it's going to be pretty narrow differences on some of them. That's all I had.
I have Jim.
Okay, as most of you know, I'm relatively new to this whole process here in the transportation field, and it's fascinating to me because I think it's great. Just quick comments. I've had some involvement over the years in the field of disability with some public meetings that got quite contentious. And, you know, people get very hot and angry and have a lot of passion and disagree on certain issues. And I really do like the idea of just setting a, you know, like 3 or 4 minutes where each person can speak and then cut the switch. Just give them that time period. Because that's really all they want to do. That's a great idea. That way you don't have certain groups coming in and trying to control the meeting. And you can really get through it. And people just want to let you feel like what they have to say is important. And the other thing is I like the focus groups. I can recall in the past few years being involved with the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco. They have focus groups with Muni. Getting ideas from blind people on how their plans, upcoming plans for streets and the buses are changing, and they wanted feedback. And I think getting feedback is really important, so let's keep the focus groups going.
Aegon?
I just had a follow-up question about the telephone survey. It notes on key elements included or outstanding issues. And if you have any sense right now what some of those outstanding issues are, and I guess what I would encourage is it would be nice to get some really good questions about some of the key policy issues that may not be addressed in this plan, could be addressed in this plan. For example, it's not in the purview of MTC, but the notion of an indirect source rule. And could you phrase a question in such a way that's not as direct as the gas tax poll you guys did earlier, but something a little bit more indirect? And I assume the results of the survey aren't going to be totally public when you come out with it, but it would be nice to use this in the service of getting some public feedback on some of the big policy ideas that could be a part of the next SESRTP or even snuck in at the very end. I think that certainly this group, the Policy Advisory Council, in many ways, we're really interested in those questions, the policies, the things that you can make little tweaks that have a big behavioral change. It's part of why we've been harping on questions like pricing and this and that over the last couple of years. It's just that those are the areas that MTC can, and in the Air District as well. So one specific question, though, is, or two, one, do you know what outstanding issues they are that you want to get feedback on in this? And two, although this is MTC, ABAGS, Plan Bay Area, would you be willing to ask a question that might be something in the jurisdiction of the Air District who would ultimately implement it, such as an indirect source rule?
I think on the second one, generally I'd prefer to refrain from asking questions about somebody else's agency. I'd rather let them do that. And in terms of the outstanding issues, I don't think we've got them settled yet. So if you've got some suggestions, tell us and they'll put them in the hopper.
Okay. Unless you have some now.
Well, I mean, I was sort of implying those in what I was saying. I mean, in the sense that I think there's outstanding questions of how's the region going to achieve the concentrated land use scenario? It hasn't been the pattern. We're going to need more than just changing investment to make that happen, and it's going to be on some of these policy shifts. So that's why if you frame the question appropriately, if it's really a good statistical sample that's not so much about do I have to pay an extra 10 cents at the pump, I mean, that's a pretty clear question. People answer it a certain way. But ones that are a little bit more a fee on new development that generates a lot of driving that's going to harm our air quality. I understand your answer that might be another agency's jurisdiction, but ones that point at those questions around pricing development, pricing of driving, some of those other pieces.
Well, why don't we check and just see if our schedule is such that you can have a crack at a draft set of poll questions before we go in the field. If it is, you should have it. If it's not, it's Randy Rentschler's fault. That's R-E-N-T-S-C-H-L-E-R.
Nice. I like that. The person who's not here. All right. We have, I think, a comment from Kathleen, and that may wrap this up. Kathleen?
The one thing I forgot to ask about earlier was the local land use and transportation planning efforts that could help bridge that gap. We talked about having those after the comment station. I think that would be really valuable. And are you planning to use actual, I mean, I know you can't do something for all the 100 plus jurisdictions, but are you going to use actual projects like various specific plans and different TODs that have occurred?
I'm not sure what you're referring to. Are you talking about at the open house stations?
Yeah, at the open house, sorry. It's on page 2 of 2 in the memo. It's the top bullet at the open house.
We will be one idea that we'll be, reviewing again more closely with our elected officials is how do we bring in some of our, excuse me, how do we bring in some of the local partners and have them at the county meetings in order to indicate what work they've already been doing at the local level?
Okay. I just think that would be really valuable because, like, even in talking to some city council members in various cities in my county, they were on the council when the council adopted a PDA. Yet now, 5 years later, they say, what is this Agenda 21 regional centralized planning thing coming down? And I hold up the agenda and say, this consent agenda item 5 years ago was you approving this and adopting this and electing yourself. So it just, I think sometimes that hearkening back to the fact that this has been going on a long time and saying, you know, here, this great transit village that you're now about to build is part and parcel of this regional vision. It's just really, people need to hear things again and again and again.
Lori.
Real quick, I wanted to know what was going to be your approach for actually selecting the community-based organizations to reach out to the community, and how do you determine that? Do you go through would you be going through the cities to the faith-based organizations? How would you know to do that?
Do you want to? We did have an RFP process actually in 2011, so the CBOs have already been selected. They submitted RFPs to us, and they were selected based on their proximity in the communities of concern. And I can get you that list if you're interested in knowing who we're working with. Or
well, let me just expand on that a little bit, because if you went through an RFP process, that may not, to me in my mind, that may not be the most effective way. Because some consultants who actually think they know outreach don't really know it. They don't really know communities that well to do an effective outreach program. So is there any other way of doing this and engaging the community besides an RFP process?
If you have names of specific groups that you would like us to engage with, we would love to do that. In terms of the focus groups, we have been working with them in the previous two rounds of outreach, so we feel like we've built up a knowledge capacity within their community as well. During that process, so we would like to continue to work with them going forward, but we're happy to include.
Okay, well, I will be sending you some names then of other organizations that I think can do a very, you know, good job in the city of Vallejo, which is where I represent, and because I just don't think that, you know, we in the past with other things that we've done and how we've used, and I don't know who you've actually selected, but. In the past, that's why Vallejo's in the situation it's in now, because we haven't really done a lot of effective community outreach, or some of these organizations have not.
I'm always looking to beef up our list of CBOs and get more groups involved. So okay. Whatever information you have.
Now, let me ask my other question real quick. Do they have to be a 501c3, a recognized nonprofit organization, or can they team with the fiscal agent?
So, and I should be clear that any information that you give me at this point would not be used for this particular contract, because we have already contracted with those CBOs. But we would love to work with any groups that you have in the future.
And well, this is the future that we're talking about with this plan. And so that's what I'm saying. I didn't know that. I guess maybe I should have asked this question earlier on then, because if we're talking about engaging the community residents for this particular plan, and then, I mean, that's important to me, because this plan is important to me. And those organizations that you've chosen or you're going to be working with is not what's going to satisfy the community of Vallejo. So unless some of these organizations would commit to working with some of the residents that I give you, some of their names, and actually putting them on their team.
And I still want to know that information. I would still like to work with any groups that you have and make sure that the information is out, definitely.
But you're saying for this plan or for the – I hear you in the future. Are you talking about for this plan?
For this plan, yes.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to – I'll call you then.
Okay.
And we'll work on that.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
So let me make sure I have this straight, because I think I do. But Pam, please weigh in on this. As I've been here the last however many years we've been here now, every time we've done some piece of outreach, Pam has continually asked us to feed her names, emails, phone numbers, organizations, people, organizations and people, things, whatever, so that she can send an email out to invite people to meetings and outreach informational sessions in those particular areas. So that, I think that opportunity for us to do that is open 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, and then Pam will make sure it gets on the right list. If I understand correctly, the staff has already contracted with someone to organize outreach, but we should still be giving our particular pieces of information to Pam so that she can disseminate that to the outreach consultant, if I understand. And she's shaking her head, yes, so Ellen, I'll get to you in a second, if you don't mind. And so continually do that because organizations change and people in positions change. It doesn't mean that just because they left their position, we shouldn't do outreach to them in their new position. So always give Pam that kind of outreach info because the wider we throw the net, the more information, the more diverse opinions I think we get, and the better decisions we make in totality for the entire region. Ellen, I'm just going to put a couple of more points in, and then I'll call on you. I thank the staff for organizing what looks like will be very good public meetings, and reorganizing them from the meetings of last year or early this year. I think having an open house session, particularly with people, organizations who have ongoing or soon to be implemented, soon to have ground broken on projects is going to be imperative in local jurisdictions because people like you and I, we're kind of on the know, right? But most people who have some development going on in their backyard that they've been reading about for 5 years forget about it until the ground breaks. And so we need to remind them constantly, remind the general public that we're trying to devise a system that is taking all kinds of different information into account. Two, I like the idea of people being able to either submit in writing or electronically their comments as opposed to having to submit those before the larger group between the later parts of that session. I think it takes away some of that hostility that somebody who has a differing opinion may feel. Also, I think it's just better access and better utilization of time management for those people who are speaking. And three, I think having the draft proposal as well as the EIR process and comments kind of going close together in tandem is important, and that way we can synthesize all this information for what will be, I think, some long, hard discussions on where this organization in One Bay Area goes next. And so I think that's those meetings that this committee will have before taking sending information on to the commission will be really, really long meetings. And all the information that we can ascertain beforehand will be important. And so hopefully the timing works well. And this committee doesn't get just one shot at that information to digest it and then give a recommendation. But if we could put in the planning of our calendar, probably two meetings, and depending on how much pull and tug there is, perhaps three meetings before we send a final recommendation to the commission. So I want to put that out there early that if we can massage these calendars at all, that this committee gets a crack at least the end discussion, two different meetings, so we can really take the information in, gobble it up, give you some ideas, and then go back and rethink it and give you better input. With that, Alan.
I'm late to the game here. Aside from going to the Hiller Museum debacle, that was an amazing thing for me. It was like being in a movie. I was wondering if it's been discussed having a webcast or several webcasts, distributing this and getting comments by email and phone. Because we use a lot of that on some of our national committees and things that we have. And it's definitely controllable. You're able to get your word out. You're able to talk out there, and people are able to give input both on the Internet and verbally. So this might be another route to distribute this information, get the information out there, and get some excellent feedback. And a lot of these webcasts can be based on areas of interest, communities of interest, and organizations. What you won't get probably is you won't get many rabble-rousers, but you'll get a lot of good public input because there's an awful lot of people that can't go to these meetings who would be very happy to get this information on webcast.
All right. Great information. Food for thought. Will?
Yeah, just one last comment. Pam's been
you know, after me for a number of Asian organizations. I've given her a number, and she's done a very good job. What I find sometimes is that the agency that you prefer would think you would think do a terrific job, they may not bid on it because their plate is full. So we need to recognize that. And at times, I'd be glad to, you know, look over the list and advise Pam if, you know, there are other agencies or the current agencies that they have selected. You know, it's how are they doing? We're in the community at the grassroots level. We understand what's going on. We hear a lot of things, and we can feedback and maybe help you update your list and reach out to more people effectively. Thank you.
All right. All very good suggestions. Thank you. Let us then move on to our next item on the agenda, which is, oh my gosh, before 3 o'clock, the staff liaison report. This has got to be a first.
Yay. Well, I don't want to belabor, just to remind you, as Naomi reported from the Equity and Access Subcommittee, that they did have a an update on the FTA call for projects for 5310. And then also, just to note that MTC recently won two Transportation Research Board awards. One was for that video that I mentioned to you earlier this year, had won a California Public Information Award. So now we're going up to the national level, so that's exciting. Mm-hmm. And then the addition that was made, I did send a revised staff report out to you that included this final note on the Regional Prosperity Plan. There's two aspects to this. There's the request for proposals, and the deadline on that is Thursday, December 20th, but there's also the call for projects. The deadline to highlight on that is tomorrow, December 13th. And I just want to note that rather than putting all of the accompanying documents here, we did provide links for you to the web, but if you need those documents, I'm happy to get them to you. And also, just to mention that the staff contact on that is Vikrant Sood, and Vikrant is here, so yeah, he's waving. So if any of you have questions related to either one of these, the request for proposals or for the call for projects, please see Vikrant after the meeting, and he'd be happy to talk with you.
Okay, great. Any other questions? Lori.
I just want to comment and recognize Vikrant Sood. He worked with, I had the pleasure of working with Vikrant on the city's of Richmond's general plan, and he did a wonderful job for us, and I'm sure that we'll receive a reward for that at some point, or an award for that at some point. But again, a good person here, knowledgeable person.
Great. Okay, how about any council member reports? Randy, and then Will?
Just for those of you who drive 280 northbound through San Jose between the areas of Highway 17, 880, and 10th Street, the metering lights will be turned on soon. The southbound lights have been working, have been activated, I won't say working, have been activated for a while. So there's a public meeting on the 19th of this month at 6 o'clock at San Jose City Hall. You can park downstairs and talk to Caltrans and VTA.
Okay, Will.
I've got a, this year on the America Cup, the MTA has indicated that overall it was very successful. They partnered with Golden Gate Transit and were able to move the people back and forth from the marina to downtown for all the people coming into town. There were no major problems, not like Christmas down there where Union Square is gridlocked, you can't move. So they were able to do a number of things to accommodate all the people that came to view all the America Cup races. And they're preparing for next year. They said that we'll be ready for that one next year.
You know, well, I'm going to make a personal comment on that. I was driving home from Petaluma, and I could have gone the long way around. I said, I'm going to just roll the dice here and go through San Francisco because I had nothing else to do for 3 or 4 hours. And I swear, that was the fastest trip that I'd ever driven through the city. because most other people who were visiting the city were using mass transit. Yeah, it was amazing what people will do when they feel the pressure or the threat of too much traffic. If only we could get them to do that every day. Kathleen.
Yeah, the advertising around that through 511, through commercials, was just to be applauded, because I think it, nobody, even if they weren't going to those events, was on the road that day if they could help it.
Rich.
I assume, I apologize for being out of the room. There's a big meeting tonight at South San Francisco regarding the station area plan. The rumors leaked out that Walmart is trying to lease the Lowe's. It's 100 feet from the entrance to the Caltrain station. And it'll be a super Walmart if they do. So there's an effort tonight to get a moratorium on grocery, which will stop the superstore until they can do something to send it through the environmental planning and things. So we've been working on that. So I was out on a phone message on that. I'm sorry. But it was kind of important. So that's actually one thing I wanted to tell everybody. If they're free tonight at 7 o'clock, the city council meeting. And the other thing is, of three things I wanted to say, is that I just got a text from the Kansas City Star. When I was a child, there was 200 miles of streetcar tracks that had been torn up in Kansas City, and they've just voted to tax themselves to build the first 2 miles of a new streetcar system. So we're starting to get back to the future. And the third thing is, if I haven't mentioned this before, I should, because you're talking about the city and transportation brought it up. There's a wonderful service called the 76 bus in San Francisco that runs only on Sunday. It goes from the Caltrain station, a senior like me, at 75 cents, to the Marin Headlands. And you can actually take your dog, they're allowed there if you have them on leash, to onto the trails. And there's a lot to do, a great visitor center. And it's a wonderful, inexpensive way to spend a Sunday afternoon on mass transit.
All right. I want to thank Pam for another year of service. It's been great to be the chair. And just, you keep us organized, and we continually look at our agendas and what do we have to do to make sure we get through the business at hand and have productive conversations. So thank you, and if you would let Steve know. And thank you copiously taking notes all the time, keeping us on track and making sure that our minutes are reflecting our decisions, as well as thank my fellow committee members. This is not any of our first jobs. I recognize that, and I think you guys do a hell of a lot of good work, and I appreciate that. I appreciate you coming to meetings on time and being responsible in your endeavors and going back to your communities and articulating what it is we're doing here. Whether you agree with our decisions or disagree with our decisions or agree only in part, I've not found any of you to be flaky or irresponsible in your charge here, and so I appreciate that. Dolores, did you have something to say?
Yes, I just want to thank you for not figuring out I was flaky, but I just want to wish you all a happy and safe and healthy holiday.
And I will end on that note also. It's crazy. This time of the year is very crazy, and I appreciate you guys taking the time, especially today and next month when we come back, because we come back at a kind of a crazy time also. And have safe travels from now and, you know, forever. So, all right, wish you all Godspeed, and see you in 2013.
Future agenda items?
Yes.
Sorry.
Boy, that was a buzz killer.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Yes, Randy.
No, I just would like somewhere along the line for us to have a discussion with staff about our criteria for public outreach, because the outreach meeting that I just told you about with Caltrans, VTA, DOT would have been, hi, we're Caltrans, we're turning on the lights, that's our outreach, until we had a long, serious discussion. Meanwhile, we have given entities grants, and they're supposed to be conducting public outreach, and I've gotten into a dispute over the public outreach, and I know it's an MTC grant, and that's what I keep holding over their head. No. So I think that what we need to do as grantors is to establish what we consider appropriate public outreach for the grants that we do hand over to people, because
allowing people to make up their own minds is not effective. I think that should be part of the string story grants. So just future agenda item. Not a buzzkill.
Okay, great. Have a great afternoon. Thank you.